Good morning. Before we begin, we have a special thank you, and that is Doug and Mark came in to discover this morning that our amplifier was down. And so we're using the handheld mic, and because of their diligent work, we get to do service today. So, yay! Well, officially, good morning. We are a fellowship of Unitarian Universalists who meet to express our individual beliefs and religious convictions. We belong to the national organization, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. We have no creed or prophet or sacred book, but we agree on seven principles listed on the back of your bulletin. We believe that each person finds his or her own path and weaves through the trials and errors of life. As we strive to survive, we sometimes cross the paths of others. Whether those interactions are beneficial or harmful, make us proud or ashamed, we come to a common place to find healing. Whatever path brought you here, I welcome you. Please take a moment to welcome your neighbors. If you are new to the fellowship, or have a guest that you would like to introduce, or you haven't been here for a long time and you want to remind us who you are, please do so. You're welcome to do so, but you'll need to wait for this microphone. So do we have anyone who would like to speak? I would also like to invite all of you, especially our guests, to join us afterwards for coffee and conversation. And I now will focus your attention, turn your attention to the announcements that are in this order of service. I have two announcements. One is that today's offertory will be an excerpt from The Music Box by Anton Liadoff. And then following the service, Jordan Nelson Long will be available for informal questions and discussion following the service. And now we'll have our chalice lighting. And Pandora, after she had opened the magic box and released all the evils of the world, she knew for the first time the pang of regret. Yet a small voice echoed inside the closed golden box, "Please, let me out." With tears streaming down her face, Pandora wondered, "What else is left for me?" She lifted the lid just a tiny bit, and out crawled the smallest creature. Hope. I light this chalice in these dark times to light the way to that gift, hope. Thank you, Michael. Michael is our chalice lighter for today. And our opening words.
Good morning, Manhattan. It is such a joy to be with you again this morning. I'd like to wish you a happy Father's Day, whether you are actively parenting at this time in your life, if you have hopes of parenting, if you remember your parenting days, if you are happily childless and use this day to reflect upon the hands that helped to raise you with joy, with love, with sorrow, with anger. We lift up any of those emotions that may come on this day. This is the first of three times that I will be with you this summer, and it is an arc of worship that begins today with us looking at screwing things up. Have you guys messed up before? Recently? I know that it is part of my spiritual practice to look at the ways that I transgress, and so we're beginning that journey today, and then next month we will look at how that reflects in our societal choices, in implicit bias. It's a very important topic given what's going on in our country as we wrestle with mistakes that may seem to be unforgivable. And then in August, we'll come back together to look at what we are doing here in the beloved community as you prepare for the arrival of your new minister. So welcome again. I invite you to settle into your seats. Get comfortable. Take a deep breath. I offer you these words from the Reverend Andy Pakula, who is the minister at one of our Unitarian congregations in London. We arrive together here, travelers on life's journey, seekers of meaning, of love, of healing, of justice, of truth. The journey is long, and joy and woe, they accompany us at every step. None is born that does not die. None feels pleasure that does not also feel pain. The tear has not yet dried on the cheek, but the lips curve sweetly in a smile. Numerous are our origins, our paths, and our destinations, and yet, happily, our ways have joined together here, today. Spirit of life, source of love, may our joining be a blessing. May it bring comfort to all who are in pain. May it bring hope to those who despair. May it bring peace to those who tremble with fear. May it bring wisdom and guidance for our journeys. And though this joining be for just a moment in time, this moment is all we can ever be certain of. May we embrace this and every moment of our lives. I now invite you to rise and join me, as you are willing and able, in the singing of hymn number 391, Voice Still and Small.
Now is the time to share our joys and concerns with our community. Please wait for the microphone.
I have lots of yellow lilies, like the ones up there. There's some in the kitchen. And please take some home with you if you want them. And if you'd like bulbs to plant in your own garden, I'll have them available this fall. Just sign your name on the paper so I have your name or address or phone number or something, because they are just thick. The more I give away, the more they grow. So.
Good morning. I have a joy I want to share. I'm really grateful to Manhattan Public Library for having their teen program. My daughter Iris has been a teen volunteer there this summer, and she is just loving it. So to everyone who supports our public library, thank you so much. It makes a huge difference in people's lives in ways that might not be obvious.
I'm happy that my big sister actually signed me up, so I already got my first prize.
All
Shirley Hobrock with membership. It's a joy this morning to welcome Ilya Engel as a new member. Would you stand up, Ilya, so everyone can recognize you?
I just thought I'd give you an update on Ann Cowan. Ann had her surgery on Monday morning, and they believe it to have been successful. Yes, Harriet, her third surgery since March. She is now in what's called a swing bed in the hospital, which is a little lower level of care, and is still hopeful that she will be released on Thursday. And her daughter, Julie, will be coming out then and be here over the weekend. And then I think Ann thinks she's going to be independent next week, but I suspect she'll need a lot of help. Thank you.
Apropos your announcement earlier about parenting, parents, and fathering, I have, for young people in here who are new parents or who are going to be parents someday, my children range in age from almost 30 to almost 50. I worry about all of them every day.
Sabrina Boker, this Friday I fly out to Japan for 2 weeks, so it's going to be a great time, and it's going to be great. Thank you.
I'm Lily Colburn. My joy is that yesterday I just got back from a three-week trip to Istanbul and Washington, D.C. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot. But a bigger joy is I'm leading the kids to Istanbul today, right after I got back. So I'll have pictures, and you guys can come look at them afterwards.
Hi, Stacy Broffman. If you guys could just keep my brother in your prayers. They found tumors in his pituitary gland, his adrenal gland, and in his liver. And hopefully he'll be going to Mayo within a couple of weeks. But if you could just send some good thoughts, prayers, whatever you do his way. Thanks.
You raised your hand earlier.
I was pointing
at you. Oh, okay. Well, hurry, come up with something to say.
My sister here reminded me. My father had a brief operation on his knee, and he's doing very well. I think he's just sleeping in this morning, so no worries there. I got a good text from him last night, so thank you for everybody who has checked in. He's doing well.
Thank you. Thank you very much for expressing your thoughts. And for those you're holding in your heart, please know that we are with you. And now it is time for us to come up, those young and young at heart, to come up and listen to Nelson Long's story.
I'll just hold it. It works. We're good. The number one rule of worship prep that they teach you in seminary, but they don't have to if you come up through lay leadership, is roll with it, right? Thank you so much. Good morning, you guys. How are you? Is it still too early? Good morning.
I stayed up.
All right, I'll have to be enthusiastic enough for all of us, I can tell. So our story this morning is called When Sophie Gets Angry. Really, really angry. Uh-oh. Do you guys ever get angry? A little angry or a lot angry? We have one who will cop to a lot. Anyone else get a lot angry? Sometimes. You know, here in the Midwest, in Kansas, we do something that I call Kansas Nice. Do you guys know Kansas Nice? Yeah, it's not nice to get angry. And so we say, I'm just a little irritated. I'm just kind of annoyed. Sophie is not a little irritated. She is very angry. And it is okay to be very angry. And let's see what happens when Sophie gets really, really angry. Sophie is playing with her favorite gorilla on the floor when her little sister, what do you think her little sister comes and does? Grabs it. Little sisters are good for that, right? She comes and grabs Sophie's favorite gorilla and says, "My turn." And you know what Sophie's mom says? She says Sophie has to share, even though that is her favorite gorilla. How do you think Sophie feels? Yeah, she starts to feel mad. And Sophie stands up, and she takes a step backward to try to take the gorilla with her, and she slips and falls over her sister's truck. And her mom can't help it. She's smiling. She's smiling, even though Sophie has just fallen onto the floor. And how does Sophie feel now? Sad and also mad. She feels angry. Really, really angry. And Sophie roars a red roar. Can you guys say roar? That was really good. Your roar is considerably better than your good morning. Think about that. Sophie roars a red roar. She kicks. She screams. She wants to smash the world to smithereens. Have you ever wanted to smash the world? No? All right. That's called hyperbole. That's a good word for us today, right? Hyperbole is when we say something that's even stronger than what we mean. But sometimes I have felt like I wanted to smash the world to smithereens. So that is how Sophie felt. She is angry like a volcano. And what happens when volcanoes get really, really hot?
They explode.
They erupt and the lava comes out. And Sophie doesn't want to be there when the lava comes out. So guess what she does? She opens the front door to her house and she runs and she runs. And she runs. Sophie lives kind of out in the country, like out here where we are. And when she's angry, she just goes and runs. And when she's done running, she cries for a little while. Because after you're done being mad, sometimes you feel a little sad. Sophie cries for a little bit. And then suddenly she looks around and she can see again. She sees rocks. She sees trees. She hears a bird, but she's not ready to go home yet. And so she finds her favorite beech tree, and she climbs and climbs, and the world comforts her. Do you guys ever spend time outside when you're sad or angry? Indeed, it is why she should not destroy the world. And she cannot. Do you guys go outside when you feel sad or angry? Do you have an outside place? No, not so much. Well, this is something that I would encourage you guys to think about. And then maybe not so much the next week because it's supposed to be over 100 degrees. But in the next month between now and when I see you again, I would love to hear about an outside place where you go and you find some peace and quiet. And I would love to hear about what you see and what you hear. Because what Sophie saw and heard helped her to feel better. And then she was ready to go home.
I went to the Kansas Prairie with my
mom. Oh, you went to the Kansas Prairie. That is a great place to go outside. So beautiful. My family likes to walk in the Kansas Prairie. Oh, it is really hot right now. We go in the fall and see the wild turkeys. Sophie was ready to come home. The house is warm and it smells good. And guess what? everyone's glad she's home. No one's mad at her. They are so happy to see Sophie. And Sophie isn't angry anymore. What's she doing now? Yeah, she's painting. She's going back to what she was doing before. Do we get mad sometimes? Yeah. Is it okay to be mad sometimes? Yeah. And then we can go and take care of our own anger. We can find a place to be alone so that we don't smash the world to smithereens. And then when we're ready, your room is a great place. And when we're ready, we can come back and pick up with what we were doing before. So with that, I invite all of you to sing our children out, and I'm looking forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you, Renee. Because We Spill Not Only Milk by Reverend Nancy Schaefer. Because we spill not only milk, knocking it over with an elbow when we reach to wipe a small face, but also spill seed on soil we thought was fertile, but isn't, and also spill whole lives. And only later see in fading light how much is gone, and we hadn't intended it. Because we tear not only cloth, thinking to find a true edge, and instead making only a hole, but also tear friendship when we grow, and whole mountainsides, because we are so many, and we want to live right where black oaks lived, once very quietly and still. Because we forget not only what we were doing in the kitchen and have to go back to the room we were in before, remember why it was we left, but also forget entire lexicons of joy and how we lost ourselves for hours, yet all the time we're clearly found and held, and also forget the hungry not at our table. Because we weep not only at jade plants caught in freeze and precious papers left in rain, but also at legs that no longer walk or never did, although from the outside they look like most others. And also weep at words said once as though they might be arranged, but which, once loose, refuse to return, and we are helpless. Because we are imperfect and love so deeply, we will never have enough days. We need the gift of starting over, beginning again. Just this constant good, this saving hope.
A couple of years ago, I traveled to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to attend the ordination of one of our movement's promising new ministers. Some of you may have been there. It was Eric Banner, one of your own. Over the course of that weekend, I was wrong about little things many times. What time events started, where things were located, and so on. And what was uncommon, I think, was not that I was wrong, but that my errors were pointed out to me. And I went through something like stages of grief trying to accept this. Shock, denial. Actually, I just stayed with shock and denial until the last day of our trip. I wanted to take the interstate back to Lawrence. The road that we had traveled down to Tulsa was two lanes, and there was construction, not much of a shoulder, the occasional truck overhanging the center line. I tend to get a little carsick. I'm also a bit of a control freak. In short, the interstate just sounded like an excellent idea. And my fellow passengers agreed, in theory, but they voiced a concern. It did not appear that there actually was an interstate option between Tulsa and Lawrence, Kansas. And there is not, unless you want to drive 150 miles out of your way, which is precisely what we did. Because I told us to. MapQuest, time, and basic common sense were not on my side, but I spoke with that potent combination of ignorance and hubris so common in people who have no idea what they're talking about. It can be very persuasive. This path home is so far out of the way that our driver's GPS simply refused to calculate the time or distance of this particular route, which is how it came to be that at a rest area north of Oklahoma City, I finally did some basic math and said, conversationally, it turns out that I was wrong. After 90 minutes in the car, we still had 4 hours left of a 3-hour road trip. The atmosphere in the car after that was thick with unspoken recriminations and silence. Finally, the other occupants of the car began a hushed but briskly cheerful conversation about the state of religious freedom in remote provinces of China. By the time someone spoke to me again, I had composed most of this sermon in my head. Since rewritten, I have so many opportunities to think about being wrong. In learning more about this, I have discovered some things that help me to understand how my own brain works, and also a little bit about our movement. It turns out that I am indeed wrong a lot. It also turns out that we all are, and that even in these times, we often think that we're right. In fact, we consistently overestimate our performance, our accuracy, and even our goodness. There is actually an entire branch of cognitive science devoted to this concept. It's called illusory superiority. Illusory superiority is simply the delusion that we are better at something than we actually are. Do you remember the study that showed that the vast majority of Americans believe that they are above average drivers? That study is not an urban legend. It actually happened. And it turns out that similar forces are at work anytime we consider what we know. There are several interesting things about this. First, by and large, we Americans think we are better at everything than we actually are. And our ability to gauge our own performance accurately, it actually declines the farther away from average, from a level of basic competence that we get. And on the other hand, those with talents in the top 10% of a skill set, the true experts, those people tend to underestimate their performance. One theory about what's going on here is that when a skill seems easy for us, we wrongly assume that it's equally easy for others. Regardless, the science says that the more clueless we are, the less we seem to know it. And if we have things nearly figured out, we will remain forever aware that there is yet more to know. If this concept sounds vaguely familiar to you, it may be because similar ideas have been voiced in philosophy and in religion for millennia. Real knowledge is to know the extent of one's ignorance. That's from Confucius. Bertrand Russell stated that one of the painful things about our time is that those who feel certainty are stupid, and those with any imagination and understanding at all are filled with doubt and indecision. And Shakespeare opined in As You Like It that the fool doth think he is wise, but the wise man knows himself to be a fool. If that is true, I am perhaps on my way to wisdom at last. What's needed to counter my own inclination to overestimate my abilities, my knowledge, my strengths, is some perspective. This, too, has been borne out by science. The tendency of truly incompetent people to overestimate their skill levels goes away once those individuals receive some basic training in the skill area. That training does very little to improve the participant's actual skills. Skill development takes time. It takes practice. And in some cases, think of tennis or chess, it requires a measure of innate talent. But schooling helps because it provides perspective. What we learn from this is that it is difficult to teach mastery, but it is possible to inspire humility. And that humility is important. In an average year, 37 infants and toddlers will die after being accidentally left in hot cars. These deaths are horrifying, tragic. They are needless at a very basic level. And they are also so easy to condemn until you look closer at the individual stories and at the science that has been done, largely here in Kansas, trying to prevent this phenomenon. For most families struck by this tragedy, it turns out in retrospect that three risk factors stand out. And they are all so very understandable. The first is parental exhaustion, that dark night that feels like it will never end. The second is a sudden change in daily routine. You're doing something that you wouldn't ordinarily do. And the third thing is a belief that it could never happen to you. Not to your family, because it is something that good parents could never do, resulting in a lack of awareness of risk and no safety plan. 37 children per year die this way, but we have data because hundreds more are close calls. The difference between those two is often taking the risk seriously, parents and caregivers who work together, knowing that communication and checking in, the small stuff, it can prevent a tragedy. People who realize in time that something is wrong because they know that they are capable of making this serious of a mistake. Illusory superiority. It can kill. When it counts, we must know that we can be wrong, that we too make mistakes, and often. Fortunately, there is another thing about illusory superiority, something that I haven't told you yet. It's that nearly all of us are reliably good at gauging the performance of those we know. I may not accurately predict my own performance, but if we're friends, I can predict yours. This holds true whether we are talking about a logic test or projecting your neighbor's contribution to a pledge drive. This is because when we think about others, we assess not by how we wish to see them. We look at what we know. So the next question, can we begin to evaluate ourselves this way? It turns out that the answer is no, at least in the absence of major depression. Viewing ourselves through rose-colored glasses is mentally protective. It has to do with dopamine receptors and communication between the area of the brain that governs our sense of self and reward and the part that assesses performance. But your friend or boss or colleague who gives you feedback that you don't want to hear, the person who is willing to risk your relationship to share an honest assessment, that person, statistically speaking, is right. Not about themselves. They are happily fooling themselves, too. They're right about you. To walk with humility, seek critical feedback from people who know you and listen to it. I have been trying here to convince you with science what religion has known for a very long time. We humans mess up predictably, reliably, certainly. Christianity explains this with the doctrine of original sin. Adam and Eve made that first mistake with the tempting apple in the garden, and it was all downhill from there. Unitarian Universalist theologian Anthony Pinn, on the other hand, suggests that our human errors, while guaranteed, are a combination of our biology and our culture. Both are products of an evolutionary process, and both support and limit our ability to function to our highest potential. I realize I might have lost a few of you just a moment ago. She sounded so rational, but then she said that sin word. So I'm going to invite us all to pause and breathe. Breathe in peace and breathe out any childhood or adulthood memories around the word sin. And rejoin me here. I want to talk about this. We don't have to use the word sin, but our transgressions matter. And this faith must provide a container in which we can wrestle with them. The concept of screwing up, whatever you want to call it, matters deeply. A few of you might be familiar with the work of the Reverend Nadia Bowles Weber. She is the motorcycle-driving, social justice-loving, cussing, thoroughly tattooed minister of the ELCA. That's the Liberal Lutheran Church. Nadia founded out in Denver a missional church called the House for All Sinners and Saints. But before that, she tried to be a Unitarian Universalist. As Nadia says, Unitarians are such smart, good people. They seem so hopeful. I wanted to be one of them badly, but I couldn't pull it off. 4 years of sobriety didn't come to me as a result of hopefulness and positive thinking. It was grace. Nadia goes on to explain that in her experience of human nature, her experience of herself as a drunk, as an addict, people screw up. And given this lived truth, she speaks of her need for something more. For Nadia, that something more is a higher power there to call her out, bring her up short, accept her reflections and retractions and her wishes to do better. Regret is a powerful emotion and one that we Unitarian Universalists might understand to be dangerous. But I'm standing before you to say that we, as Unitarian Universalists, we need something more, too. It's just that on our best days, we already have it. Friends, I am not talking about divine authority. As a faith shaped by how we agree to be with one another, our deeper calling is out of ourselves and to each other. Our higher power calling us back is shared covenantal community. What you're building right here every week. I wonder, though, if what is needed for our movement to reach more of its potential is in part an acknowledgement that so often we don't. Admitting to ourselves and to one another that we build this community imperfectly every day. That we screw up and act selfishly and we break our vows 1,000 times. And that our faith, this one, calls us to come yet again into the spaces we have built, calling each other back, moving together forward, that we might build bridges by living more fully into the spaces in between us. As Unitarian Universalists, we reject the message that we are bad people. But our work together is furthered by embracing the truth that we all do bad things. We do this as we move toward each other instead of backing away, even when it hurts. We do this when we use our pain, like Sophie did, as a signal. Understanding that it asks us above all to listen first to ourselves. We don't have to do Kansas nice. We can be angry. And then when we're ready, to one another. We move forward also when we offer sincere apologies for our mistakes. Unitarian Universalism doesn't observe Lent. We have no group ritual of repentance or confession, but we do have words that can help. And saying them where they are needed is to stand on the side of love with great courage. I am sorry. I ask your forgiveness. I know that I hurt you, and when you would like to talk, I am here to listen. Part of the theology of our Unitarian Universalist communities is that not one of us stands apart. No one is untouched by blessings or exempt from obligation, including lowly seminarians who find themselves on the outskirts of Oklahoma City when they meant to be nearer to Lawrence, Kansas. I messed up that day. It was a small thing in the long run, and it would be forgotten already if I didn't keep telling this story. But it was also an opportunity for me to explore a new way of being, as I was called by members of my community and then from deep within myself to recognize the limits of my knowledge and to accept the need, Unitarian style, for repentance, for grace, which I entered into with relief the moment I sincerely apologized. I forgive you, my elder companion said. And, you know, I realized that we messed up too. We should have known better than to listen to you. It is a gift, humility. Amen. I invite you to rise in body and spirit and join us in our final hymn, number 186, Grieve Not Your Heart. I leave you with these words from Wendell Berry, and then I will be happy to hang out and discuss with anyone who wants to do Q&A. This is from his poem, Be Still in Haste. It's short, I promise, you could even stand. How quietly I begin again from this moment. Looking at the clock, I start over. So much time has passed and is equaled by whatever split second is present from this moment. This moment is the first. May people go in peace.